case this morning, Tony versus L'Oreal. Mr. Shostak, were you appointed in this case as well?
Yes, Your Honor.
You have the thanks of the court for taking it and making all the way up here in St. Louis.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. We're still morning. A party should not be able to obtain ex post what it could not negotiate ex ante. That's a quote from the main text, that's important, of the mandatory authority Baltimore Orioles. It's the portion of the text that immediately precedes footnote 29. Footnote 29 is a reference to a case in which a model had a written agreement limiting use and was able to successfully promote a publicity claim. That's what we have here. It's tempting to stop there, but I have a few other things to say. First of all, the defendant's brief lives and dies on footnote 26. Other than pointing out that it's only a footnote, the statements that are troublesome in that footnote are inconsistent with the existence of footnote 29, which allows a publicity claim, footnote 24, which lists four cases allowing a publicity claim, and footnote 22, all of which discuss the necessity of getting consent of the person photographed to be used in the way that it was. That's one of the things that I'll have to prove to the district court, the consent. One of the five prongs of IRPA that I'm arguing are additional elements. Another thing in the defendant's brief that they get a lot of mileage out of is that there's this so-called mere exercise. Well, that word mere is in the copyright statute for a reason. It's because if it's a mere exercise, there aren't additional elements. If there are additional elements, it's no longer a mere exercise, it's an exercise with an additional element. And what you have here are things that have really nothing to do with the Copyright Act. They didn't just copy a photograph. They didn't just distribute a photograph. What they did was they took that photograph, put it on a box for a product, and used it in the connection of the sale in commerce of that product. That's an extra element. It has nothing to do with copyright. If actually, that footnote 29 doesn't even involve the commercial purpose element. It includes only the consent. So each one by itself takes us out of the copyright field. I don't want to spend too much time on the issue, although I'll be happy to the extent the court has questions. They argue in the brief that I waived a number of arguments. To the extent that you find you're tempted to discount one of my arguments on a waiver theory, just note that I have referred tangentially to a number of arguments that I thought were secondary. I kept the brief short, and my argument's going to be very short. In fact, the last thing I have to say before asking what questions you may have is that they argue that we should have national uniformity. At the same time, they criticize me for citing too many cases from outside jurisdictions. Well, outside jurisdictions recognize the possibility of having a publicity claim when you have additional elements. I think national uniformity is a great idea, and in fact, that's exactly what I'm asking for. Baltimore Orioles, despite the statements in footnote 26, taking that opinion as a whole, does it say in there that it really intends to get rid of all publicity claims? Why does it spend the first five or six pages talking about the importance of the contract that those ball players have? Why does the portion on publicity end with a statement that you shouldn't be able to get after the fact what you failed to get in the contract beforehand? You can't get around that. It's just right there in the text. Footnote 26 is confined to the facts of that case. On that basis, I request that you overturn the district court. Does the court have any questions?
It's not now at this point. Mr. Westhart, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is John Lechinger. I represent L'Oreal, and I also have the privilege of speaking on behalf of Wella, today as well. What we have here today is a claim brought by the plaintiff for the use of her photograph. And as Judge Williams pointed out a couple years ago in the Glover Roma case, this case took on the same status. One Smith Tony said, yes, take my picture. She dressed up, put her hair in a certain way, and she sat down and said, you have the authority to fix my image. That's when this became a copyright preemption issue. Unlike the person walking down the street who might get their picture shot. We don't get into the realm of copyright until it's fixed. Once it's fixed, the permission element under the copyright statute now takes us into the realm of a copyright preemption issue. So now what we have here is simply and explicitly, by plaintiff's own admissions and his pleadings, and her pleadings, nothing more than the complaint that you've now taken that picture, which I authorized you to take, and you've used it against my publicity rights.
Let's talk about Baltimore Orioles and that one footnote where the court acknowledged that a player's right of publicity in his name or likeness would not be preempted if a company, without the consent of the player, placed the player's photograph on a baseball trading card. The company here used Tony's likeness without her consent after the 5 years were up. Hasn't Baltimore Orioles already spoken on this issue in Tony's favor?
I don't think so, Your Honor. The case that, first of all, the footnote, I think it was 29. Was a CF footnote and a CF site. It cited to a New York State case, I believe, that happened to involve Christie Brinkley. And the issue was not preemption in that case.
I understand.
Okay. The issue is whether or not, because she didn't specifically use the words right of publicity in her complaint, whether she should be precluded. And what was specifically taken into consideration in deciding whether or not right of publicity should be available to her was the question of her fame. There's no fame in this case here. That claim was dismissed with prejudice on plaintiff's own account, plaintiff's own accord. I believe the point that the Seventh Circuit was making in Baltimore Orioles in the footnote, if you look at where the footnote came from, was the comment that Ms. Tony would have been free to contract and negotiate whatever she wanted to. And she actually did here, and she would have had a right to sue for contract in this case.
Why didn't she?
Well, Your Honor, originally she did not. There was a motion to amend the complaint down below after, I believe, there were some rulings made. Judge Guzman denied the motion. But that denial of the motion to amend has not been appealed.
Let me ask you another question about Baltimore Orioles. Isn't attempting to prevent rebroadcast of games where the clubs already own the right to broadcast the game a lot different from the situation here where the companies do not have the right to use her photo after the five-year period ended?
But we're really trampling right on copyright. Because I think it was Judge Easterbrook in the Pro CD case. He said that copyright violation is the use of a protected work without permission. There's no difference between the elements that we're discussing. The key question on the permission issue, I believe, is whether or not Ms. Tony or whomever is being photographed or making a performance said, you may fix my image or my likeness in a tangible form. She gave that permission. We can't go and take another snapshot of her and put it on our box without her permission. I think that would be a right of publicity claim. That wouldn't be a copyright claim because it doesn't rise to the level of being fixed.
All right, and one final question in this area. You're aware that other courts have not agreed with the Seventh Circuit in our ruling in Baltimore Orioles, and so a lot of commentators and courts have suggested that case should be read in a very narrow fashion and should not apply to the assertion of rights in persona. If we construe that case narrowly, is there authority from any other circuit supporting your position that Tony's likeness comes within the subject matter of the copyright?
I'll do my best to answer your question in a couple of parts. The first part is, I don't believe any of those other cases involve a situation where first the person came in, sat down, signed a contract and said, take my picture. I don't think there was that permission granted. But with as much respect and humbleism as I have, I'm going to suggest that I think the Fifth and Ninth Circuits made an error in the rulings that are on the books. And the error is, and it's actually an explicit, express misquote of Section 301. I'm looking at the Downing versus Abercrombie case, Ninth Circuit. I think it's one of the cases you're referring to, Judge Williams.
Yes.
If you look at footnote 3 on page, I think it's 1003, the court cites Section 301, and it says Section 301 preempts all legal or equitable rights that are the equivalent to any of the exclusive rights within the general scope of copyright as specified by Sections 102 and 103. That's not what the statute says. There's an omission. And the omission is, right after the word section, instead of 102 and 103, it goes right in and says by Section 106 in works of authorship that are fixed in a tangible medium of expression. You can't, and then from that error, I believe both courts made the comment that in order for there to be preemption, the content of the protected right must be within the subject matter of copyright. You can't have a content of a right to reproduce, a content of a right to display. There's a misquote here. And what they've done is they've basically, in my opinion, they've said, if her face isn't copyrightable, there's no preemption. That's not what 301 says. 301 says, if there's a fixed tangible medium, fixed expression, a picture that was taken with authority, you have to look at whether or not violating one of the 106 rights, not even mentioned in the footnotes, copying, display, distribution, whether one of those rights are violated by a violation of the conduct that's being complained of. Here it's the reproducing and displaying the photograph.
That misquote is that's in the Ninth Circuit case?
That's the Ninth Circuit case, Your Honor. Both courts jump right into this issue of you have to examine whether the content of the protected right must fall within the subject matter of copyright. That's not what 301 says. 301 says you have to look at whether one of the 106 rights will be violated. And it has to be one of the 106 rights that matches up with 102 and 103. And 102, of course, talks about a picture. Another issue which I think is important is Section 113 of the Copyright Statute. It specifically talks about taking a picture and having the right to reproduce it on a useful article. That's an advertisement. That's specifically what we have here. It's specifically articulated in Section 113. And I don't necessarily disagree with the notion that Baltimore Orioles is properly narrowly read. I think the narrowing is that there has to be first a situation where the plaintiff has given permission to fix her likeness or his likeness in tangible form. I think that's what this case was saying, Baltimore Orioles. They said the baseball players gave consent not only to have the performance displayed, but fixed in a videotape. And once they did that, copyright preemption became an issue. It's the identical situation here. There's the identical situation in the other case, Your Honor, in the Gloveroma case involving Mr. Zappa. As you stated, once Mr. Zappa gave permission or authority to allow his performance to be videotaped, the work became fixed. Copyright preemption became available. People do have protection of their right of publicity. They don't get permission to have their likeness put in tangible form, or they contract, and they say, I want the copyrights. Or you can only use it for 5 years, and if you go beyond that, I'm going to sue you for breach of contract. As counsel himself said in his motion to amend the complaint, proper course of action here was breach of contract. You know, I know waiver, and I listened to your questions in the previous motion. Does that mean Ms. Tony's out of her right here? I think it does. But the fact of the matter is, it wasn't appealed, and it very concisely and expressly, counsel in his opening brief says, there's one issue, whether the preemption ruling was proper. I don't know why he did that. But that's the only thing we're up here to talk about.
Thank you.
This time, you have 5 minutes.
I think, given the statements that are surrounded by footnote 22 in Baltimore Orioles, there is a question as to whether or not this is fixed because of the absence of the consent. However, even assuming it's fixed, counsel just told you nothing about extra elements. The fact that there are these other things that come in, the commercial sale, it's not that it was just fixed to a useful article. I mean, if they'd put her face on a vase and sold the vase, well, actually, that'd be commerce. If they'd been distributing the thing and using it to sell something in the vase, it's an extra element according to the other cases. And again, the consent issue is in your footnotes 24 and 29. I'll leave that alone for now. The other thing that's interesting about Baltimore Orioles, I didn't read this quote before, but because of the nature of the counterargument, at that time the court had before it players who had entered into a contract which said, here page 671 of Baltimore Orioles, quote, the player agrees that his picture may be taken for still photographs, motion pictures, and television at all times, skipping, that all rights in such pictures shall belong to the club and may be used by the club for publicity purposes in any manner it desires. Now, there is very little in front of the court on the nature of this specific contract and modeling contracts in particular. Oddly enough, I actually have done some work as a working model. I have some knowledge of the industry. It's not on the record before you, but all I would ask on that basis is that you take care not to cross over into facts that are not on the record. The nature of a total buyout is important in the modeling industry, and that is clearly not in the contract that's here. The contract says on the box for 5 years and a few other places for 1 year. Once they went beyond
that begs the question, why wasn't this originally just a simple breach of contract?
Your Honor, unfortunately, I wasn't counsel at that time and wasn't able to make the decision to file a breach of contract claim. But nevertheless, I think you're obligated to defer to the Illinois legislature, which enacted this after the Copyright Act. So they must have known of the Copyright Act and intended to have it be something outside of and beyond that. And if they want to attach additional consequences to a particular nature of taking someone else's rights, they have the right to do that. The question is, I mean, even assuming it's fixed, they took rights that they weren't weren't entitled to take, and the Illinois legislature decided to attach some additional consequences to that in the form of IRPA. Does the court have any further questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. This case is also taken under advisement. The court will be in recess till tomorrow morning at 9:30.